say. So we see that at the end of last week, Esav said, I'm taking revenge, I'm going to kill Yaakov. Rivka hears that, maybe from a divine source, maybe hearsay, and she tells Yaakov, okay, you got to leave, you got to run away, and she gets Yitzchak to charge him to go back to his own homeland, where Rivka's own homeland, and where Avram came from, and try to find a wife so that the next third generation should also be from the family of Avraham. And, of course, he listens. It says he secretly runs away from Beersheba. But Esav gets news of this. And he tells Eliphaz, his son, I want you to do the mitzvah of killing Yaakov, taking revenge. Because what he did was terrible. He deserves to die. The Medrash Tanchuma says Esav went after him. And he would have killed Yaakov, but Hashem did obvious miracles. Esav went ahead and waited for him. But Yaakov took another route. He crossed the Yarden, splitting the river, it says, with his staff, so he could cross on dry land, as later happens when Yeshua does it with the... Yaakov didn't come his way, so Esav went after him. Finally, he sees Yaakov near a cave that contained warm water springs. Yaakov went further, and Yaakov went to a cave, right? Apparently, another one with water springs. Yaakov said, I don't have food. At least me go and warm myself. He went into the cave to bathe. Esav and his henchmen went around him. And Hashem somehow created a miracle. And Yaakov, as they say, slipped through the cracks and got away. That's one of the midrash. The other midrash says that, no, it was Eliphaz. So like many things in Chumash, nobody knows the bottom line. Because the two bottom lines here disagree. Right. Eliphaz said, my son, if you kill Yaakov, I'll be the firstborn and you'll succeed me. You're my firstborn. Eliphaz said, you know what, my father, if he's such a big mitzvah, why doesn't he do it? So he went to his mother, Timna, and she said, don't even try to kill Yaakov. He's stronger, and he will kill you. If your evil father weren't so afraid, he would have gone himself. He'd rather sacrifice you in case you're successful. So Eliphaz had a problem. On the one hand, Esav says, go after this guy and kill him. And on the other one, his mother says, if you try to do it, you'll be defeated. You haven't got a hope in hell. Right? But Eliphaz had another influence in his life. Yitzchak, right, his grandfather had some effect on him. And he knew there was no way was it appropriate to kill Yaakov. So he's got a tremendous dilemma. And he comes to Yaakov, and he gives Yaakov his dilemma. You know, you're smarter than me, tell me. And so Yaakov says, okay, I know you want to satisfy everybody. So I'll tell you what the Chumash and the Torah and the Torah Shabbat Pass says. It says, Ani Kemes. Someone who's destitute has the equivalency of someone who's dead. He says, take everything I have, take it away from me, and leave me. Now I'm destitute in a desert, so I'm an Ani and I'm like a mace. So you can tell your father, Erz Gestorben, he's gone. And you can tell your mother, I didn't stick the knife. I was an indirect cause, if anything. If God wanted to help him, I left him in a position where the Almighty could help. And it says he even took off his clothes. He left Yaakov basically, it says here, in his birthday suit. It says Yaakov then immersed in a river and he davened to Hashem. Immediately, it says, a horseman appeared, galloping on a steed. He wanted to cross the river, but he fell into the water and drowned. Yaakov now had this individual's clothing and presumably his spear and stuff like that as well. Right? But Yaakov said he was afraid that someone would have maybe said, oh, Yaakov came up on this guy and killed him. It says, so rather than keep on his way, he ran to the Beis Medrash of Shem V'Ever, because we know Torah protects. And rather than go where Esav and anyone else suspected he would go, he basically went away. And for 14 years, he learned Torah in Yeshiva Shem V'Ever. It says, while he was there, he never slept in a bed. If he ever rested, I guess he put his head down on the shtender. Many people ask, hold on, Yaakov was cognizant of Avram Avinu, the first Jew. His father was the most awesome Jew ever. He must have learned a ton of Torah from them. What could he have learned from Shem V'Ever? What for 14 years? And one of the Chazal say, what he did is, Shem V'Ever lived in a difficult time. They basically lived in Chutz Lorets, outside Eretz Yisrael. And what he learned, they say, was how to apply the Torah pragmatically in Chutz Lorets, in Golus and things like that, because that was their expertise. We're all going to ask, why did it take 14 years? And I suggest, as they say, try to find an answer, because I'm beat with that one. But that's what they say. Then he was ready, he said, after this learning, to go ahead and, I guess, tackle Lavan, who he knew he'd have to tackle. And it says he goes to Haran. And on the way, somehow it says, wherever he was, he passed Haramoria, the place of the Akedah and the future Beis HaMedrash, and he realized that with God giving him speed on the way, he'd gone by it, and he said, oich, what did I do? How did I miss stopping and davening? He turned, and it says immediately he was there. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewarded him for his desire to daven at the Makom HaMikdash by taking him there. Or as this Medrash says, HaRamoria came traveling to him. Okay? And that apparently comes from a Gemara in Chulin. Suddenly, first Yaakov gets there and he starts to daven, of course, because this is the Mokim Tvila, this is the Shar HaShemayim, the gate to heaven, right? And he intended to daven, probably maybe daven Mincha early, and then leave and go. But it says, all of a sudden, he hears a tumult in heaven. He hears the voice of Malachim, angels. And it says, Yaakov has arrived. Yaakov is like the sun. He lights up the universe. And he understood that whatever he was hearing was because he was at a makom kodesh, but he still felt that he should leave, because we know the Gemara tells us in Sachim, in the early, first blots, where it says Orlar Basar, it says it quotes from, I think, the brothers with Yosef, leave Bechitov while it's still good and light. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Yaakov a nevuah, and for whatever reason, Yaakov would get the nevuah at night in a cholim, in a dream. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu hastened sunset. They give a metaphor that a king received a message that his best friend, who lived in another country, was coming. He says, I rarely see him. As soon as he arrives, make sure to extinguish all the lamps in the palace, because I would only want one spot with light. He and I will sit and enjoy each other's company, unperturbed by others. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give a prophecy to Yaakov on Har Moriah, the site of the future Beis HaMikdash, and Yaakov's ability to receive greater depth, it says, in the Nevuah, right, was enhanced by the fact that he was at the holiest spot on earth. Yaakov, it says, prepared for night outdoors. We're told that he took 12 stones, right? It says from the Mizbeach that had fallen, the one that Avram had initially constructed to put Yitzchak on. And it says he arranged them as a barrier around himself, some sort of protection against wild animals. And I guess that was 11. And he was going to use the 12th one to rest his head on. He said, Avram, who married two wives, had to... Hello? Avram had two wives, one who had two sons, one who was a tzaddik and one who was initially a rasha. And I know I am going to have four wives, he said. And Hashem is going to give me 12 sons to form 12 tribes. We already learned last week that Rivka potentially could have had them, so there may have been a Kabbalah from Avram Avinu that this was going to happen. And he said, let me devise a test. I've got 12 separate stones here. If they somehow merge, I will then realize that there will be achdus amongst my children and amongst their descendants. There will be the unity required. Yaakov, it says, he lay down, fell asleep, and it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to sleep where he was in a field, right? The ground isn't soft, and he had a stone under his head, yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it such that he had the ability to sleep, because it says he slept peacefully because he had tremendous emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu let him feel the Shechina there. And we're told that as soon as he fell asleep, the stones started saying, I want to be under his head. Right, the stones all wanted to have the spot of having the tzaddik rest on them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the nace that Yaakov wanted, they all joined. And then when he woke up later, it said he realized that he would have a unified nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know, comes to Yaakov in a dream, assures him that he will be with him and that he will return him back home.
Safe.
Right? Yaakov sees the vision of the ladder going from earth to heaven, and he saw an angel climbing that he realized to be the protective angel of Bavel. It went up 70 rungs, meaning 70 years, because that was the length of the first exile and the Babylonian kingdom. Then the angel, when he reached the 70th rung, fell. And Yaakov knew that's the end of Bavel's ascension. Then he saw the angel, it says, of Media, Madai. And it went up 52 rungs, 52 years under their control, and it fell. And then he saw the angel of the Greeks, 120 steps going up and plunging, right? And so he saw that the first three gullus that his children were destined to be in had this duration. Finally, he sees the Sar Shel Esav. He sees the angel of Edom going up the ladder. And it's going up, Yaakov thinks, up until almost infinity. He does not see Esav fall. And he's gripped by fear. He says, is this the retribution for what I did? That Esav eventually is going to take over my people? Hashem says no. Hashem says, even if Esav's angel climbs up to the galaxies, the stars, I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, promise to take him down when the time comes. Yaakov heard the voice of angels. Yaakov will in future dominate the world and will subdue every kingdom. And somehow these angels, who may have been angels of other nations, said, we think we got a chance to prevent this destiny. We, the angels, think that we can get him now, whatever that means, right? And it says, all of a sudden, he has a vision of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, right? And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is defending him against all these angels, which may portend the idea that every stinking nation, when we turn them into them, they're all basically anti-Semites in one way or another. They cannot stand A, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and B, they cannot stand the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's representative, B'nai Yaakov, B'nai Yisroel. It says that Yaakov saw Jewish history. He saw the Beis HaMikdash, and he saw the destruction of the first and the second temples. He also saw Matan Torah, which he realized is the pinnacle of all of creation, the greatest moment. The latter somehow symbolized Har Sinai, because as it got higher to heaven, he saw flames on it. Esh HaTorah, I guess. The fire of Torah, the holiness. He saw Moshe and Aharon, who would go up on the Aharon lower down on the mountain, and Moshe goes up to Shemayim. And then he had a vision of a changing of the guard, it says. He knew that he had malachim, angels, accompanying him from Yitzchak's house. And now he saw those angels going up, and he saw other angels come down. Right? And it may have been that he saw the downward angels first, or there wouldn't be an interim when he wasn't covered angelically. And he realized that for whatever reason, the malachim who had the task to protect him in Eretz Yisrael were one, and the malachim of Chutz La'aretz were another one. Finally, all of the angels disappear, right? And he saw the Shechina above him, protecting him. Hashem says, I am the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. I am the God of Avram and Yitzchak. The land on which you will lie, you are lying, will be yours and your descendants. And he has the vision of a Kaddish Baruch Hu taking all of Eretz Yisroel and folding it up and putting it under him. It says it's actually its head was on it. This was the divine indication that all of Eretz Yisroel belongs to Yaakov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and your nation will be the source of bracha in the world. I will guard you in Lavan's house and in Shechem. Yaakov woke up. He realized that he had had a nevuah, and he said, I didn't have appropriate recognition of the holiness of this place. The Shekhinah is here. The Shekhinah, this is the Makom of Shekhinah. This will be the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And it says, when anyone davens in the place of the Beis HaMikdash, it is as if we're standing lifnei kisei hakavod, the heavenly throne. It is the where it is what the conduit through which brachas go to Shemayim. Yaakov lifted the stone, and he set it up. It says as a matzeva, as a monument to commemorate this nevuah. He put, it says, oil on the stone that he found, presumably provided by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this was to indicate that his descendants in future would have oil on their heads, both the kings and the Kohen Gadol. And Yaakov made a vow saying, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu guards me and takes me back perfectly to my father's house, then I will offer Todah and Ola sacrifices. If you give me materialism, food and clothing, Aser Asran Alach, I will give Meiser of everything you give me. And that's where the first Aliyah that we in Parsha gets to. The rabbi's here. Thanks for listening. I'm going to close down. Bye.